Good morning. This is www.enlightenradio.org. And coming up is the Sports and Comedy Attack with Mike Diesel Cucarini. But this is a clip where he's interviewing Larry XL, a fellow stand-up comic from years and years on the road. Here it goes.
Hilarious, and I hate to steal your punchline, but I want to tell John so he gets a gist of it, because my brother died of colon cancer. So Larry found out he had a procedure where they had to section some of his colon out, right? Is that the gist of the procedure? Yeah.
Yeah.
So they found out like a week later, I think, he got a call that said, hey, it's a good thing we pulled that out of you because it was cancerous. So he found out he had cancer and he no longer has cancer in the same fucking moment.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, dude, I am so glad. I'm so happy for you. My older brother fought that shit. He had stage four when they when they diagnosed him, and it was colon and liver. So, yeah, he fought it for 10 years, but then he developed this infection last year. And just in, I think it might have been August of last year, he developed MRSA.
Okay.
So that will take you away from all the meds they're using to try to keep you alive for cancer. And then they focus on the MRSA, but it was just, man, it was a back and forth and it just sucked. And I miss him, but he's not in pain anymore. So that's the good thing. And, you know, I don't talk about that shit anymore, man. It's like, if I talk about it, I'll will it into being for one of the three of us. I'll just shut the fuck up now. So Larry, how's the road treating you?
Shit. Yeah. Yeah. I'd say I am being more selective these days about what I leave the house for. I'll put it to you that way.
Bravo. Bravo. Yeah. Because when we first met a long, 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 long time ago, and by the way, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to www.enlightenradio.org. This is the Sports and Entertainment Attack. My name is Mike, and I am with the very funny, very talented Mr. Larry XL, very funny stand-up comic, and we were just getting into the weeds and details of stand-up, which I like to talk about. Some people, it turns them off. I fuck them. I don't care. but so – selective, because back in the day, you would take a week-long gig, even if you didn't make any money.
Yeah, I would.
It was, I remember doing that. Just, you know, I'm doing this, honey, just so I can, so I'm explaining it to my wife. I'm doing this just so I can get in.
Yeah.
So next time, you'll see, next time, I'll make money next time. And every time you had a next time, for me, I know the only way I made money was merch.
Right.
You know, t-shirts, you know, you have to invest in, you know, creative ideas, t-shirts, DVDs, shot glasses, whatever the, you know, fuck, I met somebody who had like, there was a female comic out of the South that had like a traveling case of shit, you know, just everything under the sun, you know, all these little.
Julie Scoggins.
Yep. That's it. Yeah. Julie. Yep. Oh God. She's very funny actually.
Yeah.
I worked with her. Yeah, she's a very funny young lady. I worked with her a few times, man. So originally, when you started coming over to Wiseacres, because that's where we met, you were coming over from Baltimore. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a hell of a drive just in and of itself, man.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't seem like that back then. I mean, you know, back when I started, you know, like, stage time was stage time, and Baltimore didn't have all the open mics that DC had. So you had to drive to DC and you know, find out if you were funny in DC.
Well, I found that the Baltimore open mics, when I back way before, this is back in like 88 through like the early 90s, Baltimore had some open mics, but a lot of times you had to be invited.
Yeah.
You know, they had to, like, hey, man, I got this spot on this list of, you know, names. Come on over and do, like, 7 minutes or whatever. And it, after work, for me, it seemed, yeah, you know what? I'll just change my clothes and drive over there instead of going home.
Yeah.
It's because you want the stage time. You really do when you first start. Now, when you came into Wiseacres, I think I did something like this because you asked for stage time and I looked up and I went, oh, yeah, anytime you want to go on. Because you're not a small man.
Right.
You know, I'm not a tall man. I'm very short and I like to say cherubic, but, you know, old and fat is what I am now. But the point is you're a very big guy. Somebody had said, hey, you should check this guy out. You know, and you went up and did fine. I mean, it was a pretty reasonable set, you know, compared to, say, the list of, because sometimes that fucking Wiseacres list got out of control. You know it did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially, but I commend you for doing it two nights a week and putting on as many comics as you did. Yeah.
Well, we turned Thursday into like local pro night where we'd strip it down, have guys and gals pick each other and have four or five comics and just let them take the door, whatever they wanted to charge, $5. And I'd come down and watch the showcase every once in a while. But all I wanted was gas money.
Right.
I was like, if I'm going to drive almost 2 hours to go see this show, then somebody's got to kick in a little bit to take care of the old man. And they did. And sometimes I was just like, don't worry about it, you know, because they're getting their time in. They're helping me and I'm helping them, but it's not just me. It's, you know, you've got Joe Dealey, you've got Mark Matusoff, you've got all these other people that are behind the scenes, you know, Oscar, everybody remembers Oscar, remembers Tom Sims, you know. And that was the tough part for me was it doesn't matter if you book a tiny little shitty one-nighter or whatever you book. If you book and you're a comedian, you're an asshole. It doesn't matter if you're the nicest guy in the world. You're the fucking dickhead that didn't give me work. That's the way, you know, and I understand it, man, because I did 8 years on the road before I took over Wiseacres. So I totally get that attitude because I had that attitude, too.
Yeah, I mean, I've booked some shows, and you know, I commend anybody who does it on a regular basis because that's just a level of stress and just, you know, worry that just sucks all the fun out of being a comic.
Oh, it does. Yeah. I will mention this though, and I mention this because I think it's important to talk about. Charlie Wiener just retired.
Yep.
Over 50 years on the road. 50 years, Larry.
Yeah.
I did almost 30 and I was like, I'm done. Your pay sucks. Your hotel rooms are even shittier. I fucking hate this gig. Goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, but then you can't, like a lot of things, you can't let that one gig where you were in the weeds plowed through it, did okay, got paid and went home. But see, my problem is I started to get threats. I started to get threatened from the audience members. And I'm like, but this isn't, because you see people like that. Who's the gentleman from Boston? Really solid comic, Italian dude. He had the drink thrown at him. Did you see that?
Oh yeah. He was,
Caparano.
Caparillo,
that's it. Yes, yeah. People say that we look like each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know, but I love some of the videos he does, and I think he's very funny because he's just making fun of it. He's having a good time with it, and actually, I think it probably helped him more than hurt him.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. So, just in the past year, you know, with the whole Chris Rock thing and the Dave Chappelle thing, people are like, hey, you know, all these comics getting assaulted on stage, aren't you scared of doing comedy? I was like, I did jokes in red states during the Trump administration. If I could survive that, I'm not really concerned about anything, you know, running up on stage, you know, any more than I did. If you're a nobody comic, that can happen anytime. It's just what it happens. The like big name comics, then it becomes like, you know,
this is shocking. We never see this.
Comedy's under attack. We've always been under attack.
We've seen that on the regular for 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I had did a gig down in Bristol, Tennessee, well over 20 years ago. And the guy comes out and he says, listen, you guys don't want to go in the front. When somebody comes up to you and says, you guys don't want to go in the front, you guys, and I don't know for sure, but I'm thinking it was an Aronin, myself and Michael Aronin on a gig, because we worked together a lot and we tried to put things together for each other. And then we come around the back and there's this little like walkway that just has mud everywhere up to the back door, you know, and it's a little tiny. So Mike is looking at that like, no fucking way, man.
Yeah.
So I help him along to get in the back door, and they actually have chicken wire on the stage. Mm-hmm. So I think Mike went up and just did. I think they loved him because it was very different for them. It literally was a biker's bar. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to see anybody in that. I didn't see anyone in the audience that wasn't wearing leather. Okay. I mean, it was just everywhere and they weren't awful. I went up and did my usual spiel, and I think I did a joke about conservatives or something. I did a comparable joke. I did a joke about, I used to do this thing where I do an impression of a conservative and an impression of a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the guy got pissed off at me for because my thing about the conservative was just, look, all of the shit you see around here is mine. You keep your goddamn hands off of it. Okay, that's a conservative.
Yeah.
A liberal's more like, dude, we're in charge again. It's crazy, yeah. Man. You should hit this. So I did that comparison, Joe. Just a stupid little. The guy goes, oh, master people, I don't need that kind of bullshit. And he threw a beer at me. I caught it.
Uh-huh.
He threw it right at my face. It was coming like, I caught it. I opened it and I drank it, and you would think I was like God after
and
that.
Nobody invited you on a Tonight Show.
No, that. Not at all. Yeah. And I was there. That was my Tonight Show tape back in the day.
Yeah.
No, that's the other thing too, man, is like back then, even when I started, it was like, first of all, when I first started, Johnny, this will give you, was everything. Johnny Carson was like, people went on Carson, and you got either a nod, a thumbs up, a smile, or you sat next to him, he invited you over to sit down and talk. That's it. Your career's made right there.
Yeah.
In that moment. Now it's spread out. It's spread out everywhere, bro.
Well, yeah. Like, so what happened was like, let's rewind back to like 2020. I was, you know, there was like one show that was like, all right, I can't do this like I've been doing it anymore. I think it was back in like 20, it was like 2015 or something like that, or something like that. And you've ever been to the Stardome?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Down in Alabama. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a call on like a Monday to see if I could do a weekend at the Stardome that weekend, opening for Bruce, right? Featuring. So I'm like, sure. So, but the thing is like, if I was going to make any money, I had to drive. And it's like a 15 hour drive.
Oh, I know. I've made it before. I know.
Yeah. And I just remember and here's the thing. I've done the Stardome before, and it's always, you know, like I've always done fine at the Stardome. I've headlined a Stardome. I've featured a Stardome. But the thing is, it's like, when I went down there, I was sandwiched between two very like Comic View comics. To an audience that really wanted that, and I'd forgotten how much there's a difference between what you can get away with intellectually on stage up here as opposed to down there. So I wasn't eating it. I just wasn't doing anywhere near as good as the headliner or the MC. And I just like, man, I drove 15 hours for this, you know, even in a nice club, nice hotel and everything. I was just like, I can't, like, that just kind of almost broke me. Cause then like it had this like unsatisfactory like week there. I had to like a 15-hour drive home. I'm like, that was the beginning of me just questioning everything about comedy. And then like when the pandemic hit,
it was, Was it each show? Was it all? Did you do four shows and you ate it all four? Or just didn't do well. All four.
I didn't eat it. I just didn't do anywhere near as well as the other comics, and that bugged me. Like, I didn't get booed off stage. I didn't get like crickets or anything. I got some laughs, but I wasn't getting like these big laughs that the MC.
Like you're used to getting, yeah.
And I was just like, all right, so. You know, it's like at the end of the day, I got to be, you know, stuff like that is what wears you down and what makes you want to quit. And I don't want to quit comedy. But then, so I was started being a little bit, I started being a little bit more selective about the shows that I was doing, but I was still like out there, you know, at least 3 or 4 weekends a month, you know, doing shows, driving all over creation and stuff like that. But that was the beginning of like, all right, do I really want to drive to Fort Wayne, Indiana for feature money? No. Do I really want to? Yeah.
Can you take those gigs and trade them off for like 1 or 2 nights, not too far away where you make as much money?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you try to do.
Yeah. So, and then going into 2020, I was like, all right, I'm going to make another really hard stab at like, you know, getting into like different markets and doing stuff like that. And I had booked like 6 months worth of dates. I was going to like places I'd never been before. I was going back to like Colorado. I was going to New Mexico. I was going to go out to LA and do some networking and stuff like that. Pandemic hits, shuts down everything. I lost like 6 months worth of gigs. Ugh. and I lost my job. So I'm like, okay. All right. Yeah. It was like one of the things where like, okay, I gotta, you know, do side hustles to survive, which that's fine, you know, like a lot of, it was not that hard, but when shows came back, then, you know, I was doing, you know, I was jumping on anything I could get on because you were just lucky to get anybody interested in booking you. And then there were just some gigs I was just like, why did I take this gig? Why did I drive all the way to like North Carolina for a one-nighter, you know? Yeah, like here's the thing. It's like if it was a weekend's worth of gigs, that'd be cool. But like for a one nighter, what the hell am I doing?
Right.
So yeah.
Right. And the thing is, the chances are, in many cases, and I've seen this happen so many times, is said comic like yourself says, "Yeah, I'll take the date." And then you go down, and it's not set up well. The sound's bad. Even the MC and the headliner are going, this is going to suck. They, you know, they even know. And then you go up, and then that agent or agency chooses to use that venue to judge what you're capable of.
Yeah. I mean, well, even then, like at that point, I don't even care anymore. You know, right. here's the thing. So like, even if the gig is okay, even if the hotel's okay, you know, it's just like, you know, if the gig's horrible, it's easy, never go back. But even if the gig's okay, you know, the money isn't really worth the time and effort I put into like going down there and coming back. If I have other options, you know, that kind of thing.
But I totally agree.
That's more of like you feeling out, like you like kind of doing it with like, you know, like this whole concept of like, you know, looking after your own mental health. Like, you know, what's the point in running yourself ragged all over the country doing all these shows if half of these shows aren't making you happy? You know, it like, and I'm not talking about the shows themselves. I'm talking about just the whole process of getting to it, you know, dealing with whatever, because like at the end of the day, you are hired to do a slot on the show. You didn't even ask, okay, how many other comics are on the show? Are they any good? Am I going to have to do cleanup for a bunch of comics that, you know, basically bored the hell out of the audience for 30 minutes before I went on?
Or it's like they either bored them or they tried to shock them.
Yeah. That kind of thing. And then there's also like the, you know, going back to what you were talking about, like you were in Bristol, wasn't set up right. Like I did a gig. This was the January after Trump got elected. And I was doing,
2017.
Yeah. So it was, and I was doing a show in Northumberland, PA at Front Street Station.
I know exactly where that's at, my friend.
Yep.
So performed there several times.
Yeah. I'm headlining. My feature comes out of Massachusetts, and like liberal guy. And before the show, we're sitting there talking, And he's like, hey, do you think I should do my Trump jokes tonight? I'm going, no. Like, dude, did you see the number Ford F-150s out in the parking lot? Yeah, it's all Ford F-150s out there. Don't do your Trump joke. And if you got to do it towards the end of your set. Get these people to like you first before you, you know, like you set fire to the room. And he didn't listen. He went up. First joke was his Trump joke. Audience shut down on him. He couldn't win him back for the entire of his set. And so, like, I, you know, basically go up and save the show, you know. So there's got to, you know, here's the thing. Like, with comedy, everyone's, like, in comedy is like, okay, you know, it's like, it's all about the jokes. No, there's a lot more to it. You got to read the room. And pick your spots. Because, like, I'm sorry, but, you know, not one joke is not worth tanking the room or tanking the show and affecting your ability to come back to that room and making money. So, you know, like, as much as I'd like to, you know, and then also the older I get, the more I'm conscious about the whole like edgelord thing that a lot of new comics like to jump on. I mean, I'm guilty of it. Everybody's guilty of it when they first start out. You know, they like,
they like
making the audience cringe, and there's an art to it. And you know, unless you have the brand and the following to be able to get away with that, no matter what, you got to pick your spots on whether or not, you know, you got to take the audience's temperature before you start throwing your edgy stuff at them.
I don't disagree with you at all. It's always nice to get a feel in those first 30 seconds. Okay, where are these folks at? In the back of your mind. And if you can go to a little bit, if you throw out a little bit, you get a little darker in the first 10 minutes. Throw like a darker, more evil joke, and then see where, you know, because mine was always the travel thing I was talking about, stopping at a rest stop, and it said, come on in and ask us anything. I went right up to the guy and I said, do you have any idea how I can get my wife to blow me? And the guy's like, he pushes away from the desk. He goes, hold on a second, I'll ask her. You know, just like that. And people are like, ah, and it's like the joke I traded with Al Goodwin, I traded him a joke for this bit. He used to do this one joke about having oral sex. I love the way he did it because he's just such a sweet looking guy on stage. He's just very, you know, Al's very like rainbows and just delicious tarts and shit. I walk up on stage, people think somebody's going to get whacked. You know, that's just the nature of it, man. It's just, so I'd go like, okay, this is my impression of the thought that goes through every married man's mind just before performing oral sex. Okay, you ready? Here it goes. Wow. My wife ever knew I was doing this, I would be in so much trouble. And, you know, you hear the women just, you sick bastard, and screaming. Yeah, and I'm like, okay, we'll move. Because you can do a joke like that and then move on to other more experienced general material that happens, like observational shit that you see every day. You know, and that's kind of, effectively, I started way out there. And I came back to what I was doing years and years ago, and that's just what's in front of me. Yeah. I just talk about the fact that I can't fucking believe I'm actually going to almost be 60.
Yeah.
There's so many times I should have been dead, Larry. So many times. It's just, you're like, air, but for the grace of God go I. You know, I don't even know if that makes any sense for me because I'm not even a strong believer in religion. But I just say that phrase because, fuck, I'm still here.
Yeah. And a lot of people aren't. I mean, you know, it's weird how, like, you know.
Oh, I know.
They, you know, crazy, like, life can be and how quickly things can change and things like that. And also, like, going back, we were talking about earlier, like, I'm starting to realize that a lot of the beliefs, like, people have built their whole comedy existence on, like, now it doesn't, none of those things actually work anymore. For instance, like a few months ago, like actually maybe a month or so ago, I'm at a club opening for a comedian who has got, you know, Tonight Show credits and writing credits for different shows and everything. And you would think, oh, this comedian, they're out there every weekend, they're doing shows and they got these writing gigs and they got it made. Come to find out, this comedian also holds on to a day job because, you know, these, all this stuff that you could build a career on 10, 15
money.
Years ago. Yeah. Doesn't really work anymore. And everything's more expensive. Back in the day, everyone's like, oh, you got to move to New York. Okay, cool. Well, guess what? Those same comics that are in New York, that spent the last 15 years in New York, they're in hardly any better position than I'm in, having not lived in New York.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's amazing. It's amazing the number of just the sheer number. And I've told people this for years. I said this, and I don't know if you agree with it. I'm just going to make this statement followed by a question. But here's my years and years and years ago, they used to have people come out and comb some of the clubs from like the Tonight Show, from the networks. Just, you know, I'm going to pay you to go on a little road trip because I keep hearing about this one gal that's very funny. I want you to go. I want you to sit in the back. Don't say anything to her. Don't talk to her about who you are or where you're from. When you come back, let me know. And they used to do that. That actually used to be a job.
Yeah.
There was basically a talent recruiter for a fucking network. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now it's hits. It's likes. It's I got a million followers. It's YouTube. It's TikTok. It's all this Instagram shit. It's all Facebook, whatever the fuck. That's what it is, man. That's where the business is. Now, I say that to ask you, if your electronic press kit is not up to snuff for some other booker out there, say a Brad Garrett who owns a club in Vegas, and you're trying to get in, and somebody's recommended you to feature his week or whatever, and Brad's like, hey, what the hell's going on with 3PK? Do you have that presence? Because I didn't even look.
I mean, I got clips up on TikTok. You know, I got stuff on YouTube stuff. I my website is down, and it's been down for like the last year and a half just because the program that I use to be able to like update and create the website, it discontinued, and I'm filtering through other ones. And they're not as easy to use. And I just don't really feel like going through the hassle of like switching my account over to something else right now.
It's a pain in the ass. So you get it switched over. As soon as you get it switched over, they want you to switch it over to something else. Yeah, it's right. Just because Mo Alexander, who I'm going to be interviewing for the next interview, had a good point online. He said, listen, he said, your electronic press kit has two directions. One, your website is quite specifically for the fans. Okay, where you're going to be, little clips, your actual stand up for getting booked should be a little bit more specific and from a bigger name club, and you keep that off the website so you can send it out. And I don't disagree with that. I think that's a smart move on his part.
Right. And, yeah. And honestly, I don't I don't want all my jokes out there. I want just enough for you to know that, like, if you're going to come to see me, you're going to have a good time. But I don't need to put these like 10, 15 minute clips of me out there for public consumption because, like, come to the damn show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stupid. We're online to make you come out. And we only have one job. Our job is to go up on stage and elicit a very specific response.
Yeah.
That's the job.
And then here's another thing I found out in the last like 5 or 6 years is like nobody like back in the, you know, when I started, like a lot of bigger name comics made a big deal about like, you know, reaching down and helping comics get a leg up. And now all the comics are doing, they're not reaching down. They're kind of reaching diagonally. It's like, you're like, if you're an arena comic and you are like, you basically what you're trying to do is help to get your theater comic friends up to arena level.
Right.
But you're not trying to find like, you know, an undiscovered, you know, talent and give them a leg up in the industry anymore, which is fine. You know, that's your prerogative. You don't have to do that if you don't want to, but don't make it seem like you're doing like a lot of like heavy lifting by like giving somebody who was already making millions of dollars a year, you know, or six figures to $1 million a year doing comedy, just make twice or three times as much money as they were making.
And the thing is I tell people this and they freak out. I actually work for my wife.
Okay.
My wife works from home, and I tell people I work for her. The reason why I say that is because I know Leonardo back in the day had a whole bit about house husbands, but that's kind of what I am. Yeah. I mean, I had some, you know, I've explained this to you, you and I a bit. I've had some really nasty medical issues over the years that, you know, I've kind of come back from. And I got to tell you, thank God, there was a room like 15 minutes away that John Coulter was booking. I don't know how people feel, but John was just great to me. He let me come over and do time when I wanted to. This is Abolitionist Ale Works over in Charlestown, and the owner is just a great guy. It's a small room. It's a tight room. But, man, oh, man, Larry, I got to tell you, that went to therapy for me, man. Just learning how to speak correctly again without stammering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that those first 6 to 8 months were a fucking nightmare, man. I just, I'd get these, and I still get them. I got one the other night. My eye starts to twitch, my shoulder spasms, and I know what's coming next. If I try to say anything, it's all going to be stutter. It's all going to be stutter and jibber jabber that comes out of my mouth because I know how this thing affects my neural pathways. You know, they said that. They said that's never going to go away completely. It's always going to be there, but you may go 6-8 months without an attack, and then you'll get two or three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the way it is, and I'm fine with that. But to follow that up with the diagnosis where, oh, by the way, we just looked at your scan on your hips. You have a degenerative disease in your hips, and you've had it for like pretty much your whole life. I was like, what? Wow. So, well, they said, and this was good though. They said to go to 5 weeks of PT, and that's what I did. And I was able to get through it. You know, I used the old Lewis Black line where I looked at the lady about the third day and said, she goes, okay, we're going to do the strap giant walk. And I go, you know, this is the time that you and I are no longer friends. So just so you know, but she was just stupendous. She taught me more about resistance and what it does to your body, resistance exercises, than anybody I've ever met. You know, and that's somebody going above and beyond teaching you what you need these tools, because I have to do these things. If I don't do this shit for my hips, I'm a grouchy mofo, man. I cannot move on. And the other thing I wanted to speak to you about, now that we're at a little moment here, I wanted to ask you, you are actually a bit of a metalhead. Is that correct? A bit of a...
No, very much so. Yeah, I am.
Okay. That's great, man. Now, give me like your list of your top three.
Metal bands? Are we talking about just like recorded output or live bands or what?
I'd say live.
Okay. So best concert, hands down, for the money is Rammstein. It's a German band. They're like the P.T. Barnum of pyrotechnics. Like, literally. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. They do all but burn the damn stage down.
They do what Gwar always wanted to do.
Right, right. Like Rob Zombie, and I would say, wow, who else? Big Slipknot fan.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, the older I get, the more, like, you know, like, I just don't, I like metal. I like a lot of other stuff, like, you know, funk and R&B and
oh yeah,
and all that stuff. But it's like, I'm always like, when I go see like one of the older metal bands, I'm glad to see that they're still doing it, because when you're playing something that physical, usually the drummer is the first thing to, like, they have to find a younger drummer or like that. Cause
that's work, man. That is work.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. And I think right now the music industry is feeling the frustration of what comics have been feeling for the last like 20 years, but here's the thing. People will pay, people will cough up more money to see, you know, bands now than they will to see like comics, because a lot of bands that are going out now, they're realizing that everything costs two or three times as much as it did the last, and since the last time they toured. So they got to charge more money for tickets. And in order to even make the same money they made, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. But people are so starved for like entertainment. They're, whatever. But some of them are canceling their European tours because they just can't find, like, you know, when the pandemic shut everything down, you know, a lot of these people that were like bus drivers and guitar techs and, you know, kind of kept the industry going, they had to find other ways to live. And they were like, hey, this is easier and more lucrative than like, you know, following, you know, Godsmack around Europe for, you know, 2 months and making like a, you know, so there aren't enough people, and the people that are still in the business are charging twice as much as they used to because they can. So,
right.
Yeah. So a lot of these bands are feeling the pinch.
I think you're right to a certain extent, but yeah. I think it goes even bigger than that. I think during the pandemic, a lot of folks went, what the fuck am I doing this job for when I can do this other job and I don't have to do two of them and I'll make three times as much money? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, I got a job too. Like after about a year and a half of just doing Lyft and DoorDash, I got sick of like doing it because like I said, like they're always, you know, when you have a business like that and, you know, you don't really care about retaining people, you're always changing the rules so you can, you know, the people on top can make more money, and it's kind of screwing the people on the, like the ground level. So I got a job, and now
that way, you got a job now? You're working now?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I work at a board game.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. A buddy of mine owns one of the biggest board game stores in the Mid-Atlantic, and he was rapidly expanding. So like about two Novembers ago, I started working for him, and cause I'm a big nerd too. So like, it's like, and the cool thing about it was like during the pandemic, people couldn't go out. So they really got into board games. So people are really going, you know, it's one of those things where if you know what you're doing, you can make like a decent living selling board games, and he's very well versed in the industry. So it's just one of the things is like, okay, cool.
And can you hook me up with some bobble? That's what I'm saying, Larry. Can you hook me up with some bobble? I need bobble in my life.
I can do that. Yeah, all day, every day. What do you need?
I'm serious. I will check on that with you because my wife and I both talked about how much we love that game and we've never been able to get it.
All right. Yeah. When I go into work tomorrow, I'll get you a copy.
Oh man, that is so cool. Hey Larry, yeah. I cannot, we're coming up on our time to close out. So I just, I can't thank you enough for doing this. And you know what, man? I'm so glad we had an opportunity. We didn't work together because we had different scenes, but I don't give a shit what anybody says. I had a blast doing Elf, man. I really did.
Oh, yeah. I did.
It was
too.
So much fun. Yeah, it was just, it's a good credit to have. It's local. The pay wasn't all that great, but God damn it, it was fun.
Yeah, do you want to know something weird? I actually have never watched the movie. I missed the screening. I missed the screening, and I gave a cop, the one copy I had, I ordered off of Amazon. I gave it as a gift to somebody, but I know friends of mine have watched it because I remember I went to a Christmas party at a buddy of mine's and all their kids were watching Elfman. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, I was walking in a grocery store, which we used to have right across from the grocery store, from the food line, was the video store in Shepherdstown. I know John remembers that. And I was walking from the video store and Elfman was there. Yeah. And I walked over to pick up some, I don't even know what it was. My wife said, can you stop over? And I said, sure, no problem. So I went over to pick some stuff up. These two little kids, and there's another one in the cart, and this woman's pushing the cart, and the kid goes, Schlub, Schlub, Officer Schlub.
All right, hey.
I'll take it, man. Larry, I can't thank you enough, man. Please keep up the great work. You're a hilarious guy. We love having you on here. Keep up the good work, but be selective, man. Don't underestimate what you're capable of.
Yep,
thanks,
too,
brother. Man. Appreciate it. John, right. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. This has been EnlightenedRadio.org. Take care, everybody. We love you. Bye. Right.
Thank you, man.
Later.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.